take through that week, and then there's a daily reflection for each day through the week as you go. And so this morning we're looking at the title we've got is Love Comes Alongside. And if you've got your manuals, you've got blank spaces to fill in some of the words. And so I do expect by the end of this for someone to stand up and shout, "Full house!" And then we know you've got them all. And if we don't get there, sorry about that. Maybe I've gone off on one, but that's very unlikely. So, this course, paraklesis, just to give a brief recap, so we're all on the same page. Paraklesis comes from two Greek words. Para, that means to come alongside, and kaleo. Para means alongside, and kaleo, which means to come. So together it talks about coming alongside. And the main verse for the whole of this series is from 2 Corinthians 1 verse 4. And I'll read this in the Message version just to start off. It says, "He comes alongside," which is parakaleo, talking about God. "He comes alongside us when we go through hard times. And before you know it, he brings us alongside," parakaleo, "someone else who is going through hard times, so that we can be there for that person just as God was there for us." In the Christian life, part of coming into our relationship with God is that two dynamics begin to happen. The first is that God comes alongside us through the midst of life, and particularly we can feel it during times of struggle. And often the way he comes alongside us is through the tangible presence of another person. It's another person whose love makes God's love and his presence tangible to us. And then once he's walked with us through difficult times, the next thing he does is that he will bring us alongside others, where we become his tangible presence of love. And the journey that we're taking is very simply wanting to open ourselves up and say, "God, would you shape our lives more and more and more to be those people? To be people who know your presence in the difficult times and who then can come alongside others and share your comfort that we've received with them where they're at." And so last week, the focus has been on developing a core value of care. So deciding that coming alongside others, caring for others, love is something that we value, that we prioritize, that we want to be intentional about, give time to, give energy to, that we want to form our lives. And for us, I'm hopeful and fairly confident that every one of us, whether we've engaged with this in the last week or not, would say, yes, that is the kind of people that we want to be. One of our core values is loving deeply, coming alongside, being there for others. But the focus of this morning is looking at how, if we're going to grow in this as a whole church family, we need to translate that value of care into a whole culture of care, where as a whole church family, we're intentionally pursuing it. And that's what we're going to unpick a bit more this morning. So I want to ask you this question first. What is the purpose of church? Why do you come to church? Apparently someone once described church as a bit like riding on the bus, and that everyone sits facing the same direction. You look at the back of people's heads. One person at the front does all the driving and maybe collects some money. And then some people look out the windows, just waiting for our stop and when we're able to get off. It's slightly cynical. Hopefully it's not really how you feel, but it does raise the question, actually, why do we come to church on a Sunday? Why are we here? What kind of headspace are we in? What's in your mind when you're coming? Are we coming just to get in and get out? We'll come up, we'll come cafeteria style up to communion, we'll get our stuff, and then we'll head off into our week. Are we coming just to get our fix? This is what lifts me up a bit on a Sunday at the start of the week, and then I struggle through the rest of the week, but then it lifts me up again. Are we coming just for our fix? Or are we coming with a sense of, I'm actually coming into church because I want to love and care. Coming with an other person focus as we come through the doors. Mr. Partridge, Trevor rather than Alan, who wrote this course, he points us to this verse in Hebrews 10, where the writer to the Hebrews says, "Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." They were writing a letter to a church where in this church community, a whole number of people were just stopping meeting together. They weren't bothering anymore. And it's quite a challenge, actually, in our individualistic culture, because, come on, to be a Christian is about my personal relationship with God. Why do I need all you other people anyway? Especially if you don't really do what I want you to do, and if you try and take up my time. Isn't it easier just for me to engage with God in my way? You've got a church community here where people are starting to do that. I can get on just as well with Jesus without you. Thanks very much. And the writer is saying, no, no, no. Do not give up meeting together. Make a habit of coming together. A habit of coming together to encourage. And that word encourage is the word parakaleo. To encourage one another, to build one another up, to journey with one another as we see the day approaching when Christ comes back and we see him face to face. That word habit, the Greek word, is actually ethos. And that's the word where we start to get our understanding, our idea of culture from. So in other words, this verse points us to, as a whole church community, forming a habit, forming a culture, an ethos, of intentionally coming together with the purpose of encouraging, of caring for, of loving and supporting, and building one another up. And so in your books, if you've got it, there's a definition of culture. Culture is about creating an environment in which we intentionally and regularly come alongside others with support and with help. So how do we begin to grow that culture? There's 3 points in our book. The first one is that we start to create opportunities to establish that culture. We start to create opportunities. I can see people writing. Brilliant. We're going to get a full house at the end. We can see we create opportunities. So the reality is that some of the ways we do things on a Sunday aren't that set up for connecting and caring for one another. So the way that you're sitting right now, everyone just looking at me, seeing the back of people's heads, it's not the greatest setup for that connection. This is why we create opportunities on a Sunday in really simple ways, like having tea and coffee, so we can actually talk. It's why it becomes really important to have other aspects of our church life together, like our small groups, our life groups, so there's time when we're gathering to actually connect and talk deeper. But it's why it's also important for us as individuals to think, if I'm wanting to journey, if I'm wanting to care for others, how am I going to create opportunities? Maybe it's coming in. Maybe even right now while I'm talking, if you get bored or distracted, instead of looking out the window, maybe look around you and see, who are the people in this room? Is there anyone here that I've not spoken to for a long time? Is there anyone I've never seen before? Is there anyone where I know, oh, wow, last week you told me you're going through this. I need to talk to you afterwards and just see how you're doing. If we're going to build up a culture of caring for one another, we need to create opportunities, and we need to, this is the next one, consider how we come alongside. We need to think about practical ways that we actually engage with one another, questions that we ask, and the attitude that we have before we come into church, but equally, how we continue to be these people through the week. Who are the people that you're going to see this week? Tomorrow, during the day, where are you going to be? Are you going to be at work? Are you going to be, do you do your shopping on a Monday? Do you go around and visit a friend? Where are you going to be tomorrow and the next day? Who's around you? What's your heart and attitude as you go in? Is it just to get your stuff done? Or can it be? How can it be? To actually connect, engage with people. Simply asking how they're doing. Seeing how you can be someone who cares as you go in. And then the third one is to continue to come alongside. To be someone who keeps on doing it. I love the word habit when we talk about culture, actually. Because if you're wanting to change kind of who you are or something about yourself or the way that you do life, It's not just enough to think about it and say, you know, think about getting fit. It's not just enough to say, oh, I'd really like to be a bit more healthy, so I'd really like to eat better, or for me, like, I'd really like to go running. You know, it's not enough just to value it. I really value running enough to go buy some running shoes. You have to actually go and do it. And you have to do it intentionally and really kind of committed to it as a discipline. And then it becomes a habit that gradually begins to feel more normal, the usual thing you do, and gradually becomes natural. It's what overflows from you. And that's what we're getting at here, is how can we have an attitude and an intentionality of saying, I want to be someone who loves, cares, comes alongside. And I want to see how we do that as a community. So then Mr. Partridge goes on to explain that coming alongside means, and I'm going to go through these quite quickly if you've got your books, it means recognizing that people don't have problems but needs. In other words, I think what he's getting at there is it's about being people-focused. Caring about other people isn't just trying to solve a problem. It's trying to see that person and actually love them and walk with them. It's about knowing how to receive and to give love. We mentioned this a few times. It's come up in sermons recently that the, you know, psychologists in their research over numbers of years have found that the core need at the heart of every person is to have an answer to the question, am I loved? Am I valued? Do I belong? And these next 2 points, knowing how to receive and to give love, and loving as we've been loved by God, this is how we do it. Caring for one another is above and beyond anything else. Not solving problems for people, though it may well look like that, but above and beyond anything else is loving, speaking value, showing that that person is worth something and belongs. And how we give that love as Christians is by knowing that first we are loved by him. And what's amazing about this, it says in 1 John 4, it's because God, we love because he first loved us. Growing as people who care for others, who love others, can sometimes, maybe this is just an omission for me, but sometimes feel a bit like a burden, a bit heavy. Oh my goodness. So now I need to come into church aware of everyone else's needs. Have I got the energy? Can I even do that well enough? Oh my goodness. But the first thing to realize is this. God isn't asking us to love other people so that he will then be more pleased with us. It's not a task to achieve so that God will like you. It's not something that if you do badly, God is going to be annoyed with you. It's something that overflows from knowing that even if you went to sleep right now and you didn't wake up for the next year and do anything good, achieve anything, love anyone, God would still love you fully, utterly, with a passionate love. And when you understand that, there doesn't need to be a fear of failure, a fear of not hitting the mark, a fear of not being good enough at doing this. But you receive his love. That is why we come and worship. To receive God's love, hear his love, and then out of the overflow of that, we can choose to love others. And the final thing in this particular list is that coming alongside others is an expression of authentic community. Jesus said to his disciples in one of the last conversations he had with them before going to the cross, he said, it's by the way that you love one another that people will know that you are my disciples. It's not by the size of your Sunday congregations. It's not by the programs that you run. It's not by how many, I don't know, shopping runs you do for people. It's not about how much you read your Bible, but it's by the way that you love one another that people will see that you're my disciples. In fact, me and Anna had one of her friends around recently who spent 10 years in social projects. She's been down in Peckham. She's done a lot of research on looking at what helps projects be successful. She's been engaged in them, run them, a whole number of different things. And we were talking to her about a particular area where there's a whole load of projects that are starting up. And we're asking her, what if the church was to do something there? What would be distinctive about what the church does? And she said, the simple answer of it would be love. And I found that encouraging, because that's kind of what I assume and think should be the right answer. But from someone who's been there, done it, and researched about it, been in the midst of it, she's saying it's about love, because you can have so many organizations who are going for the outcomes, but at some point your motivation will come through. And at some point, the difference between how Christians love and how the church loves and how other organizations set up to deal with issues, care for people, the difference is that when someone is sitting in front of you, you see that person, and even if what they need doesn't fit with your agenda, doesn't fit with your outcomes, doesn't fit with what you're trying to do, you change to love that person. You flex, you shift to love that person, because it's a motivation, it's a heart to love. And that is the kind of culture that we want to be. And so then he goes on here to say, what is, if we wanted to develop this culture by being intentional about it, thinking about it, deciding what we're going to do, being habitual about it so it becomes natural for us, what is the heart of that culture? And this is what he finds in the feeding of the 5,000. And I'm going to go through this relatively quickly. And if you want a deeper one, then we'll do a bit longer at the next service. But the heart of the Paraclesis culture, he describes, if you think about the feeding of the 5,000, you have this scenario where Jesus has taken his disciples away. They've been on a big missionary trip. They've come back, and he takes them away for a retreat and some quiet time together. But the crowd see them going and run ahead of them. And by the time they arrive for their special retreat holiday together, they have a crowd of 5,000 men. So add women and children, it's potentially 10 to 15,000 people. And Mr. Partridge says that the disciples suffer from a compassion deficit disorder, that they're annoyed and frustrated about it. Now, I'm going to come back to that, because I don't fully, well, I agree and disagree, but I'll tell you why. What I fully agree with is that we see in Jesus an example of what a compassionate heart looks like. If you read, when Jesus sees this crowd coming, it says that he's moved with compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so Jesus' reaction to them isn't to send them away. Jesus' reaction is to, I need to use the right words so you can fill in. Jesus' reaction is to accept them, is to validate them, and is to reach out for them. So it's not his agenda. It's not what he was planning. It's not what he was intending. Suddenly, all these people with all these needs, Jesus' reaction from compassion is to accept them, to validate them, to give them time and his energy that says, your needs, who you are, is worth something, and is to reach out for them and meet them where they're in need. And compassion comes, the kind of Greek word for it, is actually comes from a word that describes a pain in the stomach or gut. This is where we get our phrase gut feeling comes from. Compassion is an incredibly vivid word. It speaks about this pain inside that moves you to action. And so compassion is to be moved inwardly, to get involved, to care, and to come alongside. If you think about the difference between the sincere sympathy you have when you hear that someone else's, that a friend's loved one is sick, compared to how it feels when your loved one is sick. The latter is that internal compassion, gut feeling of, oh, we've got to do something. That's what Jesus felt when these people came. And for me, there's an incredible call on us to share in that compassion of Jesus. This crowd comes, and to Jesus, every single one is his loved one in pain. Not someone else's issue, not someone else's friend, not someone else's to deal with, but his loved one he cares for, and he's moved towards them. And the disciples, for me, I'm not sure that they were simply annoyed, didn't care, didn't feel anything. I wonder if their issue more, because they stand up and say, Jesus teaches them all through the day, the crowd get hungry, and the disciples say, these guys are hungry, we need to send them away to get food. And I think that's what's going on inside of them is actually seeing a need, but then not thinking they can do much about it. Trying to find the sensible solution. And I think that what we see in this story is Jesus calling them, training them, helping them to, when they feel that compassion, not just channel it in what seems sensible, but to bring it to him. And where they see a need and then see their lack, I can't do anything about that. It's nothing I can do. I think what Jesus wants them to do is to see what's in their hand and to say, look, you've seen that need, now don't shut down that feeling of compassion, but bring it to me. Tell me, what do you have? And they'll bring what you have, that compassion, to me, and I will show you how to respond. Does that make sense? So we have this list of things that compassion looks like: moving towards others, accepting responsibility for others, giving no excuses for why we won't move. I think what God wants us to grow in is allowing compassion to move us towards other people. You may see someone in need and feel like you can't do anything, but I want to challenge you this week. Don't clamp it down and say, I can't do anything, it's someone else's. But say, okay, Jesus, no idea what I'm going to do, but I'm going to take a step towards them. Maybe I'm just going to say hello. Maybe I'm going to speak to them. I'm going to take a step, and then I'm going to ask what we go on in this list. What do I have in my hand? What have I got to give? I'm going to give that to you, and you, Jesus, make it enough and do what you want to do. I feel like there's a mixture in this of being very intentional about simple, practical ways that we decide, I want to be someone who cares. I want to be part of a body who cares. I'm going to think about how I can take opportunities to do that, to connect with others, to think of others, not just myself. And then I think there's a bit of an adventure and potentially a slightly more scary out of our comfort zone call for us, which is to say, are we going to be people who love not just when it fits our resources, our ability, what we can do, but when we see a need that's beyond us, that comes to us, when something moves inside of us, say, someone's got to do something, we're going to be people who take a step towards it, even when we have no idea where it's going to go. Because to be honest, we might not be able to solve the problem. That's not actually what Jesus has asked us to do. He's asked us to love. And also, from the people I know, the experience that I've had, the stories I've heard, the God that I know, I think we will often be very surprised at just how much God does when we take that step to love where we thought we had nothing to give. Amen.